Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we talk lovingly about our favorite superhero team, the mighty Doom Patrol.
Hey everyone, I'm Reading _ Hicks on Twitter, or Paul in real life. And if you want to send us emails, waitingfordoom@gmail.com is where you ought to do that too, in your computer thing or device. We're also on Facebook, and there's a website called mygreatestadventure80.blogspot, because it's a blog, a spot with blogs, .com. And there's details about the show there too, from our friend Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com especially.
Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, who is Wilfred. He is at WFDPod.
Hello, humans.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yes, and I don't mean to toot our own horn, but honk honk. We've got there's posts about DCOCD on the old Comicosity. Yeah, they've got every single podcast we release. Our good friend Aaron, he updates Comicosity. And if you want to see the ladder for DCOCD, because we're rating every DC event in order, that's got the scores, it's got the ranks, it's got the titles, and it's got the links. Mm. That's worth checking out. And it's fun, and it grows every time we release one. So every fortnight, it's a bit more exciting or a bit more confusing, depending on your point of view.
Yes.
Anyway, Mike, how has your week been in comics and other such stuff?
It's been a little bit quiet. Work has taken up the majority of my time because it's been school holidays here in Queensland, so we've been a bit short-staffed. So work's been fairly chaotic. The one notable comic I did read in the past week was the Detective Comics Annual, which basically gave the backstory for Clayface in the Rebirth era, and it was so good. It was the story, the art, the pacing, everything in it was really good. It was, I loved it. I want to read it again, actually. It was that good. So, yeah, it was, but I can't fault Detective Comics at the moment. They've been doing some great stuff, and for those that aren't aware, Clayface was actually on Batman's team, based in Gotham, and the most recent arc has been kind of about the team falling apart and Clayface's fall from grace and back to his bad ways. Slight spoiler alert there. So the annual basically shows how he became Clayface and what led him to getting into that shape, I guess. And it was really well done. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, well, I have to check that out when someone lends me the trade. Awesome.
Okay. What have you been reading?
Well, there's been crazy Marvel sales sort of ongoing in waves on Comicosity, so every now and again I've been picking up an interesting Marvel trade. I'm on a bit of a Bendis kick. I mean, with him coming over to DC, I'm sort of trying to finish up some of the stuff that I started to read with him at Marvel. So, you know, checking out a bit of The Defenders, which is... Yeah, Luke Cage, Power Fist, and Iron Man, and that's not right, is it?
No, I don't think Iron Man was ever in Defenders. I'm sure some Marvel zombie will correct us, but I think that's a safe bet that he wasn't.
Yeah, Jessica Murdoch, and anyway, so that team, and that's been good. So yeah, I read the first trade of that for, I think, paid something like $2.99, and a few weeks later is on sale for 99 cents. Oh, I hate being ripped off like that. Jeez. Anyway, so that's good. I've got a bit of Jessica Jones banked up to read, bit of Ultimate Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and checked out, No Surrender, the Avengers comes out every 2 hours comic.
Really?
And, it's Avengers is weekly at the moment. They're doing this story called No Surrender, and
right.
We're only 14 chapters into it.
Only? Oh, my God.
And the weird thing is it's not that big a story. Like, you'd think 14 chapters, it's going to be crazy and intricate, and it just isn't.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not sure where... I mean, it may all be worth it in the end. I'm waiting to see, but shout out to Dougie, who's been shooting me Marvel codes quickly for that one.
Nice work, Doug.
Yeah. Anyway, so shall we have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way?
Let's do, please.
Okay, if we look at the state of things on the Darrington Way front. Well, I had a dream the other day that Fug was a villain, and Fug will be revealed as a villain in the upcoming comics.
Oh.
Don't know if that's some sort of, preview that's come to me, but mark it down.
I think that's just your subconscious maybe revealing some feelings towards a current run, maybe.
Maybe. Mm. Yes, but... I have to give props to Nick Darrington for his art. He's just released the cover for Mr. Miracle with a fantastic piece of Darkseid.
Yes.
And honestly, I mean, his design sense, it is so next level compared to... I mean, I would say he's the best artist in comics at the moment. And certainly, I mean, he, as far as doing incredible eye-catching pieces, his work is ending up on my lock screen more than anyone else.
Nice.
And I think that's the ultimate test of art quality is it on Paul's lock screen, you know?
Oh,
I think
you'd you'd
agree with me there. But anyway, Gerard particularly is very, very quiet. And I think it's fair to say that there's a sense of we've all been a bit let down by the fact that the Doom Patrol is still, well, it's been a year and a half, yeah. And we've had, 2 years. It's been 2 years, isn't it? Yeah. September 16, September 17. So, it's a year and a half, have had 10 issues. 10 issues, and there's a crossover, but, I mean, I think probably the heavy lifting on that was done by Steve Orlando, and the issue that leads into the crossover is not yet out, so we're expecting that soon. We'll catch up with that in a minute. But, yeah, I think there's a sense of a bit of quiet embarrassment. So, staying quiet. But I'm starting to see all the indicators that I think Doom Patrol Volume 6 is about to wrap up completely. I mean, all the Young Animal books, they got to the end of their first year, so first 12 issues, and then they did a relaunch, so they all got renamed. So we ended up with Shade the Changing Woman instead of Girl. We ended up with Cave Carson has an interstellar eye instead of just a mere cybernetic eye, and Mother Panic is now called Mother Panic Gotham AD, and they've all got new number ones and relaunches, except Doom Patrol is missing from this because it never really reached its 12th issue. In fact, they cancelled the 12th issue, and they just said that they're wrapping up this story with the 11th issue, which we haven't read yet, which leads into Milk Wars. Milk Wars, of course, we have read, and we've seen how that turned out. So there were big changes in the team. We have to see that play out in the comic, and it seemed like a natural point to do some sort of relaunch or perhaps a rename, a repositioning of the comic. So, you know, were we going to get a Volume 7 or were we going to get, you know, the Amazing Doom Patrol or something, you know, some slight change to make it a first volume of the new... with a new title or something. But, yeah, there was a sense that something was about to happen. But I suspect now that soon there'll be some sort of announcement of what is going to happen. And it wouldn't surprise me if Gerard steps back from the writing because I think I would speculate that I think the delays are on his part because I think, Nick's one hell of an artist, but he doesn't seem to be, a slacker at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think as embarrassing as the delays might be, I think Gerard is probably better off taking a step back.
Yeah.
If not permanently, you know, let someone else like Steve Orlando step up and take charge.
And on that, I mean, I read the latest JLA, which I think 28, I think, is the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, it picks up plots from the Doom Patrol. So, I mean, remember in the first issue of the Doom Patrol, we saw that there was that dead god of heroes. And
yes.
Danny the Brick was the one responsible for this guy getting his head bashed in. We see that happen in the latest issue of Justice League of JLA, Justice League of America. So it's actually Kronos, the Atom villain, who's responsible. He's traveling through time and he's been looking for this thing to basically wipe out all the superheroes, and the best way to do that is to kill the template for the superheroes. So, and the only way to do that is to find this brick that can think, and he, you know, finds it, and then he bashes this guy's head in, and that's where the issue ends, with that guy dead. And wow. That's a Doom Patrol plot. So, I mean,
I'm really enjoying that series, but I'm determined to only read it in trade, so I have to wait even longer now.
Yeah, so two trades from now, I think you'll get there. But
gosh,
you know, so is that Gerard saying, "I'm not going to finish this story, Steve? Do you want to do it?" Or was this always the plan? I don't think it was always the plan. Young Animal was always fairly separate until this crossover. So
it wouldn't surprise me at all if at some stage during the behind-the-scenes work on Milk Wars, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Jared and Steve did have discussions, and, yeah, Jared was either thinking, I'm never going to get back to that storyline, you run with it, or, hey, just run with it because I can't be bothered. Who's going to know?
Yeah. So, weird. But, yeah, that gets picked up there. So, wow.
Wow.
Mind blown. Poof. But yeah, I mean, to me, that's a hint of Gerard divesting himself of the series somewhat,
I would say,
and maybe clearing the decks for someone to come in. I mean, I'd love to see a change of writer. And while I wouldn't want to see Nick Darrington move on, I think it is inevitable that a man of his immense talents will be moved onto something with a higher prestige level than the Doom Patrol.
I will be more sad about Nick leaving the book than a Will Gerard.
Yeah.
As harsh as that sounds, I think Nick has done brilliant work on this run. And it's got its own unique character, and his look is so, you instantly go, that's Darrington stuff. It looks great.
Yeah.
And yeah, I will honestly miss Nick's work more than I will miss Gerard's work. As much as I have really enjoyed Gerard's contribution to the Doom Patrol legacy, yeah, it's frustrating. It's a frustrating run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, I would say that one thing that Young Animal has done very well is bring in lesser-known talents and give them a chance to shine. So, you know, if Young Animal with the Doom Patrol is to continue, then I expect that we'll get someone who's we're not expecting who's going to be great. So, yeah.
Look, I'm sure an up-and-comer like, I don't know, Chris Sabella, you may have heard of him. I'm sure he'd love a chance at riding the patrol.
Yeah, Gabe Hardman, someone like that.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll have to watch this space and see. But, I think I don't think we're going to see another Gerard Way issue in a hurry after issue 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there was one thing. Someone on Twitter tweeted their cosplay, which was bringing to life the Nick Darrington Robot Man, and that was Grant Raycroft. He did a fantastic job of that cosplay.
Well done, Grant. That was so fucking cool.
Yeah, check out the Twitter feed for Wilfred for pictures of that we retweeted.
Yes, nicely done.
Anyway, I've taken up too much time. Is that because I can hear some ticking, I think.
Yes, speaking of time, it's time for the Doom Clock. Yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's been 7 weeks since we last saw the Patrol in a comic, and that was Doom Patrol / Justice League of America number 1, otherwise known as Part 5 of Milk Wars, which we covered in episode 119, and it showed us the Patrol and the JLA take on the forces of Retcon Industries, and they rebooted reality and had Rita Farr, aka Elastigirl, return back to our reality. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
And then it all just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
Oops. Issue 11, the lead in to Milk Wars, is due. I hate saying this, but I'm going to have to. It's due at this stage now on April 25th of 2018, 1 week away, apparently. I've had the Comixology notification email that it's coming, so you know,
we'll see. Means we'll probably get a preview of it in about 3 or 4 days.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for a mere 12 cents American on April 18th of 1963, with a cover date of June of that year, was issue 80 of My Greatest Adventure.
What? Hang on.
Yep.
That's the first one, isn't it?
That's the very first appearance of the Doom Patrol. Yes, Arnold Drake, Bob Haney, and Bruno Premiani introduced us to Niles Calder, Cliff Steele, Rita Farr, and Larry Trainer in a story entitled The Doom Patrol, in which Dr. Calder gathers these three misfortunate souls together to prevent the villainous General Immortus from possessing a super weapon found in a crashed spaceship. So, yeah, their very first story, very first appearance.
Wow.
So, happy 55th birthday to the Doom Patrol.
Oh, 55. They'd be getting their bowel cancer screening kit from the government again.
Yes, apparently. We covered issues 80 through to 85. Oh, God, you're great. of My Greatest Adventure, all the way back in episode 5. Of Waiting for Doom from January of 2015.
Did we? Lord.
We did. We did the very first 5 issues in our 5th episode. Wow. So you can go and check out episode 5 for all the details of that initial introduction to the team. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hey there, everyone. This is your old buddy Head. You know, Aaron Moss, over at the Head Speaks podcast. I'm still here, and so is my podcast. Starting in November, and for however many months it takes, we're going to put the Atom aside for a little while, and we're going to look at DC Comics Armageddon 2001 crossover. Join me and some other podcasting and internet friends as we take a look at, well, Armageddon 2001. A hero today becomes a villain tomorrow. Join us and find out who. On the Headcast Network, Armageddon 2001, along with a lot of my usual segments. Come, check us out. Available at head.headspeaks.com, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever else you find your podcasts at. Come, check us out.
And now it's time for the doomsplaining segment of the show, which we call, oddly enough, doomsplaining. this week, we are returning to Doom Patrol Volume 3. We're going to be looking at issues 11 and 12. And Paul, kick us off with issue 11, please, sir.
All right. So, issue 11, it came out, well, it had a cover date of October 2002, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, but also according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it actually came out on August the 7th, 2002, and it had a cover price of $2.50, which is pretty pricey back then, but we'll forgive it because it's awesome. Spoilers. It was edited by Andy Helfer. It was written by John Arcudi. Artist was Tang N. Huat. Huat? What are we, how are we saying that these days?
I've been saying it Huat.
Huat. Mm. Which, I don't know. Anyway, great guy. Mm. Lettered by Bob Lappin and colored by Dave McCaig. And it had a cover by Tan, which shows a spider's butt and the Doom Patrol in a web beneath the spider's butt.
Yes.
And it's not just a regular spider. It's a weird, monstrous spider.
Huge spider.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's mostly orange, reminds me a bit of nacho cheese in colour.
Right.
But let's get into what actually happens within So we probably ought to recap. So previously in the Doom Patrol Volume 3, the Doom Patrol have retained the rights to the team name, but lost most of their corporate funding from Jost Enterprises. Ted Bruder, a.k.a. Fast Forward, a.k.a. Negative Man, urges the team to get back in the spotlight by fighting the Justice League villain Amazo, seen rampaging nearby on the news. As they race to attack the angry android, they narrowly avoid a man who tries to end his life by stepping in front of their combi. Death by combi. Hmm. They glimpse nearby the pale man who was also there the night Ava, a.k.a. Freak, tried to kill herself. Suspicious. Following this albino asshole to a nearby abandoned factory, they are attacked by demons or monsters or perhaps demon monsters. These demon monsters overcome our heroes, who awaken to find themselves in the fiery depths of hell with excellent mobile phone reception.
Is there any chance that they could have been monster demons?
They could have been monster demons. Okay. Anyway, Ted explains to his mother that he's sorry he hung up earlier as smoke sort of slides around his head. He also explains that he can't really talk right now as he narrowly avoids a demon dragon. The team assess the situation. Hellfire, check. Demons, check. Suffering souls, check. Yep, looks like they're in hell. Ted soon finds himself confronted by himself, who self-to-self speaks some harsh self-doubts about himself. And Shailene, a.k.a. Fever, is also having a crisis of confidence as a demon whispers that she will always hurt the one she cares about with her hot hand powers. And coincidentally, Vic, a.k.a. Kid Slick, is hearing from another demon how Shailene will never care for him the way he cares about her. But if he shows her how serious he is about her, then she'll be so sorry that he's gone. Ooh. And Ted finally cracks and tries to run off the hellscape ledge into the fiery pit below. His plummet to certain death is uncertified by Ava's tendrils grabbing him. She has resisted the demonic doubt due to her early exposure, I would presume. And the team rally around Cliff, a.k.a. Robot Man, who seems unaffected, and he holds the traumatized teens tightly to prevent them from killing themselves. Meanwhile, at Jost Enterprises, the coincidentally named Thea Jost hangs up from an unsuccessful call to the team. He resumes his marketing meeting where his best are pitching him a Doom Patrol TV series with Jack Black as the chief, a.k.a. Niles Calder. Now, I know what you're thinking. Jack can do funny, but can he do drama? He can, trust me, says one of the men. The quest to turn a profit on the Doom Patrol IP continues. Back in hell, Cliff is analysing the situation. Now it's gone to hell. First, Ava tries to commit suicide. Then that man on the road tries to commit suicide. And now Ted, Shailene and Vic are being driven by suicidal urges. Ava talks of sensing a presence like that smoky demon emerging out of Robot Man's chest casing right now. Cliff sets off in pursuit of the demon while Ava restrains the others. The demon passes ethereally through a wall and Cliff smashes through after it. He is stopped in his tracks by the sight of a giant spider, a giant monster, giant demon, giant spider monster demon.
Yes.
Guarding a web of dozens of cocooned victims. Why me, God, says Cliff. Meanwhile, in a nicer part of hell, the pale dude and his blue minion are catching up. The pale dude complains that he is busy, but it's unprofitable. He seems suspicious of the blue minion, Semyaza, and tells him to stop playing the harp. Cliff starts fighting the giant spider monster demon, or GSMD, as I'm going to call it, as one of the cocoonies begs him to don't leave him like this. He breaks the webbing on the cocoon, and the fellow floats free as like a spirit. But then Cliff sees all the other traps, souls, and he stops stunned. What was I complaining about? At this moment, the GSMD drops a massive chunk of rock on Cliff, which rips his arm off his torso and compels us all to take a drink.
Hooray!
Hooray! The team have recovered their addled wits, but Ava is still stunned that the demonic intruder was hiding in Cliff this whole time. Ted gets sarcastic and Fever berates him. I wish you'd stop that. There's nothing funny about hell or Satan or any of this. She's right, you know. The team turn to see the pale man, now in his true form, as a smug-looking, massive, pale, cloven-hoofed, horned demon. Good stuff.
I can't believe that Volume 3 has never been reprinted or collected, because it's so much fun.
Or even put on Comixology. So good.
Well, that too, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, if you're listening to this and you haven't checked out Volume 3 and you managed to find some of it in back issue bins, grab them. Do yourself a favor.
Yeah.
If I can get all Molly Meldrum for a second. And check out Doom Patrol 3. I just realized half our audience are going to go, who's Molly Meldrum? Google it, kids. Google it. You'll learn that way. But yeah, it's There's, I love the dark humor in this as well, like Ted talking to Ted, and it gets really dark when the spirits are talking to Vic and Charlene, and then there's doubts about, well, maybe this, you know, talkative spirit was in Cliff all along. It's like, oh, there's paranoia and pandemonium and chaos and demons and, oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, and one thing about the art, I mean, if you haven't seen it, there's no straight angles in this guy's art ever, just about. Like, everything is, you know, dynamically, you know, upshot or downshot or, you know, crazy tilted, and, you know, the panel borders are so skew-if and, you know, shattered. Well,
in a lot of this, there's hardly any panels at all. Well, yeah, I mean, panel borders. It's all just one big fluid scene for a lot of it.
Yeah. And one of the things that makes me sad about Volume 6, as great as it's been, is Gerard has admitted that he hasn't read this volume. And you can tell, I mean, there's so much good stuff in this that he would want to, I don't know, just acknowledge in some way. But he's not read it, so he hasn't. Yeah.
I'm disappointed by learning that. I thought he'd read everything.
No, he confessed in an interview that he hadn't read 3 yet. So I presume he hasn't read The Burn Run, but there's no loss there. Anyway, I'm dying to know what happens next. What happens next, Mike?
Well, issue 12 has the majority of the same creative team, written again by John Arcudi, Tan and Huet on the art, Bob Latton on letters. Guy Major did the colours in this one, edited again by Andrew Helfer. It has a cover date of November 2002, but came out September 4th of that year, again, for $2.50. And it opens with a bit of a flashback, but not like a crappy John Byrne flashback.
This one has a point.
This one has a proper backstory. It opens with an image of the angel Israfel. He, with the sweetest voice in heaven, singing songs that the other angels wept to, his beautiful, all-loving heart, his sacred instrument. We're also introduced to a pale-skinned fallen angel named Raum, who inspired the worst impulses in people and drove them to commit the unforgivable sin of suicide. Mm. Of course, Raum wasn't having any of Israfel's nonsense, so he tore out the angel's heart, cut it into strips, and use those to string a lyre. As in, not like a person who tells lies, the musical instrument. Okay?
Ah.
You with me?
Right. Yes.
He then recruited the demon Samyaza to play this lyre, each note more beautiful than a songbird's dream. And so the souls of those many suicides trapped in the abyss the patrol currently find themselves in hear this divine music and seek heaven at its source. Ah. We cut back to the present and learn that it's Samyaza himself giving Robot Man this history lesson as a way to explain his desire to rebel against Raum and rule in this small hell that they're in. And though trapped beneath the claws of the giant spider monster, or GMSD, I think you're calling it, from the last issue, Cliff still asks how he can help. And the demon begins to free the souls trapped in the GMSD's web, which sends a spider chasing after them. Samyaza brings Cliff his severed arm and proposes an alliance between his loyal forces and the patrol. Speaking of the patrol, the rest of the team are surrounded by a horde of demons led by the now demonic-looking Raum, who's in full demon form and says to the team, "Look at you. You think I'm going to kill you? I'm not going to kill you. I'll scratch the Lord's Prayer on your skulls, pull your bowels through your ribs and show them to you, force buckets of filth down your throats, but I won't kill you."
That's a different type of bowel cancer screening.
Ava suddenly unleashes her tendrils, grabbing her teammates with one and using the other to swing them to safety, but the demons give chase and the team start fighting back. Except for Charlene, who decides to give up, considering that they're trapped in hell. Raum hears this and taunts her. "You're right. You are trapped and doomed. Any struggle is worthless. Abandon all hope." As Charlene screams in terror as the demon approaches her, Raum is stopped in his tracks as he's hit in the head by a flying robot arm. Chonk! Cliff stands there beside Samyaza and his loyal demonic forces. "Not today, you son of a bitch," cries Robot Man. The cavalry has well and truly arrived, and the battle is joined. As the opposing demonic forces clash, Cliff reunites with the rest of the patrol and tells them that they need to get out of there. Trust me, Ted, not all problems can be solved by balling up your hands into fists. I think there's something in that for all of us, don't you think, Paul?
Yes.
With Cliff's knowledge of what's really going on, the team realise that they're still under the abandoned factory that they entered back in issue 10, which we covered in episode 118, and that the trapped souls are acting as power batteries for Realm. So as they start freeing the souls to hopefully weaken the demon, of course, Negative Ted's phone rings again. And he answers, "Not now, Mama. Not fucking now."
Back I don't remember demon. That word being in there, Mike.
Back at the demon fight, Samyaza and Realm are taunting each other until Realm realizes the souls are escaping, and somehow he commands his former underling to start playing the lyre. As soon as they hear the music, the souls start to return, becoming entranced by the sweet sounds, until Cliff runs up and breaks the instrument with his remaining good arm. The souls are free, and as they leave, Realm is defeated, diminished in power, and returned to his fallen angelic form. Cliff tells Realm that he's scum, and calls him a spirit killer, stealing the smallest hopes of the dead, murdering them, not just leading them to commit suicide. As a final parting taunt, though, Realm comments on how curious it was that Robot Man's teammates were driven to despair, but he wasn't. And the reason for this is that Clifford Steele has been dead for many years, and his soul is long departed. The Metal Man has no soul at all. And the team just turn and leave the Laughing Angel in his abyss. The issue closes with Shailene trying to console Cliff, as she thinks that devils must tell lies all the time. Meanwhile, Negative Ted is enraged by a TV news bulletin about the JLA taking care of the Amazo android, which he had hoped the patrol would do to gain more publicity. Again, back in issue 10, episode 118. And Ted is furiously wondering what they end up getting after their hellish night under the factory. And at this point, his phone rings again. And it continues to ring outside DPHQ until a man walking past the garbage bin it's been placed in investigates and finally answers it with, "Hello?"
Oh, dear.
What did you think of issue 12, Paul?
Oh, well, I mean, it starts off with this Israfel?
Israfel.
Israfel, this angel, you know, beautiful angel who gets slaughtered and his heart ripped out, and literally his heartstrings become a harp.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Gross. And you had a go at me earlier for being gross. Yeah, but I mean, it's great to see the majority of the Doom Patrol rally and pull together, and then there's sort of a demonic uprising, and oh, it's all fantastic to look at, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Now,
according to some research, Israfel is an actual angel. Apparently, he is the angel who blows into the trumpet before Armageddon and is sometimes depicted as the angel of music. There you go.
Armageddon 2001? Or?
Let's say yes.
Okay.
Cool. He played Wave Rider's theme music.
Sure. Ah, sweet. And you can hear more about that in DC OCD Episode 6.
Oh, God.
Last really?
Anyway, Realm is also an actual demon, apparently. In demonology, Realm is the Great Earl of Hell, ruling 30 legions of demons. Although apparently he's depicted more as a crow, which adopts human form. So that might explain the markings on Realm's face.
Yeah, he. I mean, in his human guise, he actually reminded me a bit of Boy George.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, he's much more menacing as a demon. And,
oh yes.
You know, and in his full glory, he's actually spiting spider arms as well, or legs. Spiders don't have arms, do they?
Nah.
No. I'm thinking of spider monkeys, aren't I? Yes. Yeah. I mean, my only criticism of this story is that Realm goes unnamed for so long in this story.
Yes.
He only get his name in the very last chapter, and, you know, particularly when we've been seeing him, you know, for, what, 5-6 issues maybe, mm-hmm. here and there. It would be nice to not be able to, you know, keep referring to him as the pale dude, as
yeah,
I was.
Yeah, but, you know, it could be worse. We could get nothing at all, like a certain other volume of the Doom Patrol.
Well, it does remind me a little bit of that Doom Patrol John Byrne trick, but I think it's good to name your villains, because, you know, naming villains, you know, we want trading cards of them and, you know, who's who pages and things like that. So if you don't name them, we can't do that.
Yeah. But I think this is a really well done little arc about the demon and angel stuff. And yes, you're right, we don't find out much about Realm till the flashback at the start of this final part of it. But it's still well done, I think, and it all wraps up really nicely. And I like how it throws more doubt about Cliff and whether or not he has a soul, and it gives him more, it tortures him more. And I hate getting a thrill out of seeing Robot Man being tortured, but it's just, it's what we've come to expect for poor old Cliff. He gets tortured by life, and he still succeeds, saves the day.
Yeah, but at some point, Cliff could be fairly, you know, pragmatic and say, if I don't have a soul, so what? I'm still here and I'm still me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, we've seen him become a computer program and get rebooted, and we've seen him, I mean, in the Pollock run, they recovered his soul and reinstated it. So, I mean, this could just be demonic tricks, and, you know, Cliff might just have seen too much crap to be susceptible to self-doubt. So,
I think Charlene's got a point, though, that, you know, demons and devils do tend to lie. Right?
Yeah, they do. Very satisfying story, and, you know, a nice little divergence. I mean, were they really in hell, or was it just, you know, an approximation of hell created by Ram? It's, you know.
Yeah, that's a bit of a blurred line, because the way Samyaza is talking is that it's like just some small dominion, like a small version of hell that's just underneath the abandoned factory. But
it's like the hell equivalent of Tasmania or something. It's not mainland hell, it's offshore hell.
Yeah. It's hell adjacent.
Yeah. But, I mean, how many times do you see hell come up in a DC comic without, you know, the demon showing up, or, you know, Blaze or Satanus, or Satanus has anus in his name. Anyway. It all comes back to bowel cancer, doesn't it?
There's the episode title. Just going to make a note. Nah, I think I'll call it something else. Anyway, I think, as you said, it's a very satisfying conclusion to this story arc. It's wrapped up nicely. It takes them on a different path with angels and demons. And, yeah, it was good fun. I really enjoyed this arc.
Well, let's rubber stamp it, Doomsplained.
Cool.
Shall we play another promo?
Sure. Oh, hang on. Which promo are you talking about?
Siri, play me the worst promo in the world.
Okay, playing the worst promo in the world. Why would you do this? What have I done to deserve this, you monsters?
It's J.L. May. We're covering the Silver Age.
This J.L. May, a comic event from Mark Waid.
We're crossovering a podcast. There's 12 of us involved.
Get it in your ear holes, this J.L. May.
Tell you all about the Silver Age. It's not great,
but it's okay.
We really have to warn you, it has a controversial one.
where Mark Miller wrote the lead.
But it also has some good stuff. Deep Dark style, Hage Metal Man.
Challenges of the Unknown.
Green Lantern Flash Patrol of Doom.
The Seven Soldiers of Victory. I'll in there too.
The annual JL May event is upon us once more. 2018, we're reading The Silver Age from 2001. The journey begins in the podcast Justice's First Dawn and continues in the shows Relatively Geeky, Coffee and Comics, Supermates, Waiting for Doom, Idlehead of Diablo, The Longbox Crusade, The Lantern Cast, Batgirl to Oracle, Comic Reflections, Cosmic Treadmill, The Fire and Water Podcast.
Do you know it's JL May at all?
We checked the date.
It came out in 2000.
We got it right.
And we're ready for some fun.
Do you know it's JL May at all?
All begins this May.
Read the books.
Listen to the podcast too.
Read the books. Listen to the podcast too. Read the books. Let them know it's JL May.
Something, something.
Okay, I'm just going to put a hat on and then take my hat off and say hats off to you, Mike, for editing that monstrosity. You're a brave, brave man.
I've only got slight trauma after that. But yes, roll on JL May 2018.
Yeah. I mean, I watched a film recently, In the Heart of the Sea, which is about whaling, and there's a bit where they've got the whale carcass on the deck and they want to get more oil out of it, and they send Tom Holland, very young Tom Holland, aka Spider-Man, inside the whale carcass to get the last of the oil. And figuratively, I think that's what you did in podcast editing for that promo. So well done, Mike.
You're welcome, and you're welcome, everyone. And I'm also very sorry, everyone.
Oh, dear. Anyway, we'll start the mailbag. We got an email from Mr. Tim Price. Tim Price. And he titled his email Burning Out? Question mark. And there's a bit of a pun in the spelling of burning. Anyway, he said, "Hi, Doomsayers. I salute you for persevering through Volume 4 because, boy, it is not bringing you much fun. The artwork is good, yes, but there's only so far that it will offset the stories. A villain with no name for two whole issues, normally a mystery, but yes, in this case, no one cares. That's the worst thing a writer should hear about this story. No one cares. Kiss of death. Some aspects of the story sound a lot like Byrne's Fantastic Four run, which is a shame as there's far too many comparisons between the Patrol and the Fantastic Four, and it's a disservice to the Patrol to make them feel like an FF book. My own problem is I tend to get tired of writers' dialogue. Eventually, the voice and mannerisms of the characters become too repetitive and predictable, and even a good story is overshadowed by having the cast talk and act the exact same way in every single issue. I got that way with Claremont, and I'm definitely burned out with this style. It's a nitpick, I know, but that's a turnoff for me. And then the repeated Rita loses her clothes again, and a romance with an underage girl again. It's just gross. Please, Byrne, just stop. I'll stick it out if you can. Not very long to go now. And I've really enjoyed the little of Volume 3 you've covered. That's a surprising gem. And DC OCD, such a fun show. Looking forward to more of both and you guys feeling some joy. Tell Wilfred he's doing a great job, and I eagerly await the coming ascension of our cyborg overlords.
Don't encourage him.
This pleases Wilfred.
Thanks, Tim. That's great feedback, yeah. Completely agree. The burn run is not a lot of fun.
I've enjoyed sort of ripping a new one, I must admit.
Yeah, but you know, you don't want to punch down all the time. But sometimes it's deserved.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be tactless sometimes.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this week in our question of the week, we are tackling the question, who is your favorite cyborg? Who is your favorite cyborg? And yes, and we firstly heard from Dr. Ange, at Dr. Ange 70, and he said, there is really only one answer, Darth Vader. That guy kicks all the butt. You know, if Luke had only joined him, they could have ended that foolish conflict. Hashtag awesome in originals, hashtag ruined by the prequels, hashtag redeemed at end of Rogue One. Yeah, nice. Agreed. Yeah, Darth Vader, pretty decent cyborg.
Yeah.
Yep. What's he got? Arms and legs, hands?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
good. Because Obi-Wan had the higher ground and sliced him up. Oh, that's true,
yeah. 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 Well, he's got to have the higher ground.
Yeah. Pretty handy. Clinton at Coffin Comics said, Luke Skywalker, Cliff Steele, Hank Henshaw, and Victor Stone. To which Ooh. Martin Gray replied, come on, choose one, you wuss. Thanks, Martin. Mm. And thanks, Clinton.
We heard from the fantastic cast, which is Steve Lacey using that account in error, I would say. And he said, Davros, almost any version, but I particularly love the Julian Bleach incarnation. That's not the original Davros. That must be one of the later Davroses.
They're all just one Davros to me.
But
it's a good call, yeah.
Yeah.
Gord Tolton chimed in with Deathlok. That's the Ooh. Marvel cyborg dude, isn't
it? Yeah, that's Marvel cyborg game. A few people say Deathlok, I think. Anyway, we heard from Martin Gray, and he said Tharok from the Fatal Five, or Baby Tharok from the Fetal Five. he's the guy who's literally half a cyborg down the middle.
Yeah, that's
flesh on one side, cyborg on the other side.
Is the Fetal Five an actual thing, or is that just a Mart joke?
No, he's just punning.
Right. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Right. Chris from BTU and Bat Books chimed in with Jamie Summers, the bionic woman portrayed by Lindsay Wagner. Nice choice. That was very cool. Yeah.
Definitely the hottest cyborg.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We heard from Dr. Ange again, and he said, I do feel I need to give a comic answer. I have half a mind to say Tharok.
Oh, God.
Golly.
Oh, Ange.
Yeah.
Craig 101 at Craig R. McD said, does Cliff Steele count? If not, it would have to be Cyborg, Victor Stone, or Robocop.
Ooh, Robocop. Yeah. And we heard from Saul Bishop, and he agreed, and he said, Cyborg is my favorite cyborg. Nice. I think it's fair to say Cyborg is a cyborg, so that is a legitimate answer.
Yes. Jack Rocha. Or Rocker, chimed in with, from Terminator 2, the reprogrammed T-800.
Mm.
So, the good Arnie. Yeah.
Yeah. A bit more cybernetic than organism, really, but yeah. There is a little bit of organism in there.
Yeah.
We heard from Sean from Secret Wars and Beyond podcast, and he said LeBron James, and a picture of LeBron James done up as Cyborg for some reason.
Mm. Mm. Yes. Okay.
LeBron is a cricketer, I believe.
Yes. Ryan Daly at Ryan Daly 01 just sent us a picture of Darth Vader.
Well, that's just lazy. Come up with an answer, Ryan.
Yeah.
Just send a picture.
Like, it's a picture of Darth Vader. So what? What's your answer? Oh, right. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yeah. Then we heard from, I think that's Keith Colbeck, and he said, Deathlok, Luther Manning, with a very nice piece of art of a Deathlok, looking very cyborgy.
Very cyborgy, yes.
Cyborgy.
Tim Price at Tim Price 17. We heard from him again, and he said, Korvac, half man, half desk.
Picture of Korvac who has a prominent computer console middle.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. We heard from Jessica Boyd, and she said, does Machine Man count? I think so. Anyway, or not enough human components. His face might be human. I've never been clear about that part. However, his tenure on Red She-Hulk made him my fave. Sorry, Robot Man.
I will let you off this one time, Jessica.
I'm familiar with Machine Man from, that comic? Next Wave.
Right.
Okay. He was in that, and it was quite funny.
Okay. Siskoid chimed in with, the only good answer for someone my age is the original Bionic Woman. Cool. That's two for Jamie Summers.
We heard from Tim Price again, and he said, these Reavers losers lived in Australia for a time. Ugh, Lady Deathstrike was kind of cool, except for the pre-90s extreme name. And there's a bunch of random mutant cyborgs from the X-Men.
Yeah.
The Reaver. You read the X-Men, didn't you?
I did, yeah. The Reavers were a thing, and the X-Men were hiding in the outback when I think they were pretending to be dead
or
something. It was a thing, X-Men,
yeah.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, look, it's Tim Price again, and he said, I did like Venture's Old West look in Spider-Man 2099. Okay, a cowboy cyborg. That's different.
I did a bit of Spider-Man 29. I don't think I got deep into it enough to see Venture.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I was with it for a bit, but yeah, I don't recall that character.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Anyway, we have from Basque Levesque from the, Invasion First Strike, the podcast.
Right.
With Cisco. And he said, the cyborg Victor Stone or Robocop? Can't choose. Well, choose one, you indecisive Canadian.
Wow, harsh. We then heard from the Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace podcast account, and they offered the pre-2013 Oscar Pistorius.
Oh.
Wow.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Nice. Over on the Facebooks, we heard from Abel Padilla, and he said, Robot Man's a cyborg, right? He has organic brain and robotic limbs, right? But I'm going to take a turn and pick the Golden Age Robot Man, but not the one from the All-Star Squadron. I'll find a link to demonstrate when I'm not on the phone. And I don't think he ever got back to us with that link, but we believe you.
Yes. Gautam Sharan chimed in with, it's a toss-up between Deathlok and Cyborg for me.
Ah,
good calls. Yeah. Yeah.
Deathborg, Cyblock. No. We heard from J. David Weirder, and he said, Commander Stargazer from Silverhawks. I have no knowledge of this Silverhawks.
The Silverhawks were kind of like space cops, but they all...
He's gold!
I've offended James.
Heretics, heathens, get out of my house!
The Silverhawks were awesome. They were like space cops. They fought intergalactic bad guys. They all had some sort of, you know, bird thing about them. And they had like a robotic bird companion. And they all had wings and they flew around. They were awesome.
Ah.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Hmm.
Anyway. Shag Matthews chimed in with a picture of Nardole from the recent Doctor Who series.
Looks like the guy from Little Britain to me.
Well, it's one of the same. Yes.
Is he a cyborg? I didn't know. I mean, I've watched pretty much every episode of Doctor Who, and I don't remember him being a cyborg. So that,
yeah, he's a cyborg.
Didn't stay with me.
Huh. Yeah, there was a bit where they put his. I'm sure they put his head onto this like war robot machine body, and he was stomping around. I'm sure he's a cyborg. Look, if Shag says he's a cyborg, Shag would know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. And then Derek William Crabb sent us a picture of some animation dude, a statue.
It's yeah.
Cyborg. James, what's this? He's coming. Who's that?
Don't know.
You're useless. Bloody. Anyway. Yeah, no, I don't know who that is.
Derek, you'll have to get in touch and clarify who that is, because we're three old white dudes that don't know shit about anime characters.
Is it a Pokemon?
Oh, God. Kathy Kakarala chimed in with Cable.
Cable, yes. Cyborg bits and cyborg diseases.
Yeah, techno-organic virus, sure. Yep, okay.
Brian Kennedy, hello Brian, he said Jean-Luc Picard, not sure if this counts, but even without his stint as Locutus, he did have an artificial heart. Oh, that's right. Forgotten that.
That's a cool addition. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Jared Driscoll said the $6 million man. He says $6 million for cyborg parts is a bargain.
Then we had Edwin Latore, who said Tammy Duckworth. No, really. Who's Tammy Duckworth?
I don't know.
I've got to Google now. I'll ask James, but he doesn't know anything. Tammy Duckworth. Is she a duck?
Is she worth a duck?
American politician. Is she the one who got shot?
Oh, she was a former soldier. I think she lost both her legs.
Okay.
In a helicopter crash. And I think she has artificial legs.
Ah, okay.
I think that's makes her. Sense.
Right. Okay.
Wow.
Right.
We're on fire tonight.
Yeah, we are.
Al Sedano chimed in with Misty Knight. Yeah, she's got a cybernetic arm. Definitely counts.
Sweet. CC Joseph sent us a picture of Seven of Nine. Seven of Nine, the ex-Borg woman.
Mm.
Not to be confused with Meatloaf's android friend or cyborg friend. 2 out of 3.
Oh, God.
Don't worry. 2 out of 3 isn't evil because 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Stop. how long have we been holding on to that one for? A
couple of days.
Oh, wow.
Get in the recovery position, Mike. Come on.
Oh, I've lost it. Wow. Dean Jones pitched in with The Terminator.
Hmm. And then we heard from Arden Bartlett, who said, Rom the Space Knight. I thought he was just a toy.
Well, I thought he was... Oh, actually, I think the Galadorans are like a humanoid race, but I think they go through some process to become the Space Knights.
Ah.
So I think it's allowable. All right, smartass, what's your answer?
Well, I was really stumped. I thought, which idiot came up with this question? Because I can't think of one. And then it came to me, and no one else said this. I think I really like Bucky as depicted in the Marvel movies.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Metal Arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty cool. I like him.
He's all right.
Yeah.
Some people love him a lot. You know,
he chucks people down stairways well and stuff.
That's true. That's a good cyborg skill, I guess.
Stairway lobbing.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? Did you
Yeah, again, this was another tough one. And I've gone for one that no one... I wanted to get a different answer out there. So... it's a favorite cyborg from a certain period of my life. And when I was younger, that favorite cyborg was Inspector Gadget. I mean, he's a total fucking idiot. I mean, Penny and Brain save the day all the time. Okay. But still, he's got
brains
some cool
is the brains. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's got some cool cyborg parts. He's got the helicopter that comes out of his head. He's got the gadget arms, the gadget legs, the rocket skates, you know. He's even got the gadget mobile, which turns into, you know, from boring family van into racy sports car type thing. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I, I want to see the prequel series to that, where he has the horrendous accident that leads to this outcome. He loses, you know, 75% of his body.
It's like when Cliff Steele falls apart, except all flesh.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought as big a dimwit as he was, it's still a kind of cool cyborg. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Got through that.
Thank God. So next week, we will be launching the next episode of DCOCD, and we'll be looking at War of the Gods.
Gods.
War of the Oh My Gods. And then the following week after that, at this stage, we'll be looking at the lead-in to Milk Wars, issue 11 of volume 6.
Finally.
Which I think, if I recall correctly, was originally due out in November.
November, yes.
Yeah, of 2017.
Whoops.
And we're now halfway through April.
Yeah.
Of 2018.
No one's noticed, it's fine.
Yeah, no one. No one's Yeah, sure. And do we have another question of the week for the next Waiting for Doom, Paul?
We do, yes. The question of the week, and it's on my mind for some reason, is what's your number one goal at a comic convention? What is your number one goal at a comic convention?
This will be interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's lots to do at conventions.
There are. You can queue up or you can stand around.
Yeah. A restroom that doesn't have a massive queue.
Yeah.
That's a day in itself.
Yeah. Or buy a drink for $10.
Yeah.
You can do all sorts of things. Anyway, tell us what you like doing at a con.
Or what your number one
thing. Your number one. Yeah. Your ultimate goal at a con. Your finishing move. Anyway.
Speaking of finishing moves, if you want to get in touch, you can say hi to us via Wilfred on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can get in touch on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And you can always check out Doug's excellent posts on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. That's us done for another Waiting for Doom. Thanks, Paul.
No, thanks, Mike.
Thank you. And we'll catch you all next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
Next time, Gadget. Next time.